This is Nach Yomi, Sefer Yehoshua, Chapter 10. The voluntary surrender of the inhabitants of Gibeon, who choose to make a treaty and an alliance with the Jewish people rather than fight against them, really irks many of their fellow kings and many of the regimes in the south of Israel. The king of Yerushalayim summons four other kings to join together with him in laying siege against Gibeon, and punishing them for this treasonous act, in essence. The citizens of Gibeon call upon Yehoshua, asking him to support them in this battle, because obviously they will be routed by five kings. There's no way that their small city, relatively speaking, will be able to stand up against five kings and their armies. Although Gibeon was a powerful city, it was a significant city, it was no match for five cities and their entire armies. Yehoshua responds by intervening with a surprise attack at night and defeating the five kings who flee from them. Along the way, these kings are struck, and their men are struck with hailstorms that actually cause more casualties and more death than the battle did. These hailstorms, as the Navi tells us, were brought by Hashem in order to finish them off. The kings actually find refuge in a cave, and a few of the stragglers make it back to the fortified cities. One of the most famous and surprising moments in the Navi is when Yehoshua calls upon Hashem to stop the sun and to stop the moon until the Jews will be able to complete this battle. They had five kings, five armies to defeat all at once, and they didn't want to lose the opportunity. And according to the traditional understanding of the text, what it literally means is that the sun stood still for an entire 24 hours while the Jews defeated their enemies. However, there are several other interpretations, including the Radak, the Ralbag, and others. And in the Thursday night in-depth study of Nach, of this week's Nach Yomi portions, we are going to go into some of those interpretations and see what the meaning truly is. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that, and you will listen to that, because I think it's going to be an eye-opening experience. In the meantime, so Yehoshua urges his soldiers to pursue their enemies, not to allow too many of them to make it back to the fortified cities, and they do so. And he also imprisons the kings, essentially, in the cave in which they hid by rolling a rock in front of it. The kings are eventually extracted from the cave. They are placed on the ground, and the soldiers of Yehoshua place their feet upon the necks of the kings in a sign of triumph. And Yehoshua uses this as an opportunity to say, listen, you were able to overcome such powerful kings. We're able to defeat them. Why? Because of the help of Hashem. Hashem can help you to see through this entire military campaign and the conquest of the entire land if you stay true to him. The kings are hanged, but removed from the place that they're hanging at sunset in order to bury them in the cave, the very cave in which they had originally been hiding. This is in fulfillment of the Torah's directive not to leave a dead body unburied for too long, for more than a day. Building on this momentum, Yehoshua proceeds with his army to conquer several other key southern targets, including Makeda, Libna, Lachish, Gezer, Eglon, Hebron, Debir, before finally returning to the camp. The Navi notes how quickly, decisively, and with almost no resistance and no problems along the way, the Jews are able to meet their military objectives. It's really remarkable, and obviously it's because of the divine assistance that they are receiving along the way. We have to consider that the initial attack on Gibeon was really a test for the Jewish people. The Jewish people have every reason to resent the Gibeonim for having misled them, for having brought them to the table, the negotiating table, and having convinced them to commit to a treaty and to an alliance under completely false pretenses. And they might have stood aside and said, listen, let these five kings take care of these Givonim. We don't care about them. They fooled us. They tricked us. We don't owe them anything. We're not going to attack them. We're not going to fight them. We're not going to punish them, but we're not going to stand up for them either. However, Yehoshua decides to stay true to his word, to stay true and fulfill his promise to be allies and be partners with the Givonim, and therefore comes to their aid. In reality, this becomes a tremendous benefit, a boon for the Jewish people, because instead of having to attack each of these five kings independently, to lay siege to their fortified cities independently, to engage in long and potentially protracted military campaigns to capture each of these cities, they drew all of these cities out of the protection, out of the shelter of their walls, into the wide open fields of battle, so that Yehoshua was able to take care of them all in one fell swoop and then use the momentum of that battle to secure the remaining targets in the south. So really, this was a tremendous blessing in disguise. We should also not neglect to mention the connection between the stories of Yehoshua and Avraham here. Obviously, Avraham was the first Jew to relocate to Israel, settle in the land of Canaan, and to receive promises from Hashem that one day his descendants would inherit this land. But that's not the only feature that our story has in common with that of Avraham Avinu. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, Avraham Avinu, this was the very place that he came to, this location where all of these battles are taking place between Beit El and between Ha'ai. This general vicinity is the vicinity in which Avraham had originally set up his tent and originally called it home. Moreover, there's a strong similarity between the story of Avraham fighting against the four kings. If you recall in Parashat Lech Lecha, four kings subdue five kings. The five kings rebel, and the four kings put down the rebellion very decisively, reasserting their power, and in the course of that battle, capture Lot, the nephew of Avraham. Now again, Avraham was abandoned by Lot, essentially. Lot decided to go live in Sodom, in an immoral and unethical city, and really to leave behind what Avraham had tried to impart to him. So Avraham could have said, listen, you made your own decision. You made your bed. Now you have to sleep in it. You decided to become a member, a citizen of Sodom. Now you have to deal with the repercussions of that, even if it means being captured in battle by ruthless kings. But instead, Avraham decided to stand up and to save his kinsmen, to save Lot. And like Yehoshua, he had a moment of truth. Like Yehoshua with the Givonim, where they again could have said, hey, listen, they made their bed. Now they have to sleep in it. No, they stood up and they came to their aid, just like Avraham came to the aid of Lot against, in that case, four kings, in this case, five kings. And just like Avraham, the way that he took advantage, the way that he was able to prevail over the four kings was by using a nighttime surprise attack. That's exactly what Yehoshua does in this case as well. Here we have the barad, we have the hailstones that come down and kind of finish off the armies. In the case of the Avraham Avinu, we have that those who were fleeing from the army fell into clay pits, and that this caused this enabled Avraham to have an even more decisive, even more complete victory over his enemies than he could have anticipated. So there's a lot of parallels between the story of Avraham and the story of Yehoshua, and undoubtedly this is trying to emphasize to us how Avraham's personal life is replaying itself through the lives of his descendants. We know the concept of Ma'ase Avot Siman Abanim, that what the Avot did was really a precursor and a foreshadowing of what would happen to the children. Hashem's promises that he made to Avraham are being fulfilled through the children, and Avraham's actions and behaviors that gained for him this special relationship with Hashem, that secured for him this covenant with Hashem, are now being reenacted and identified with by the inheritors of the land, his great-great-great-grandchildren.